This is David Duke. And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast. Broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent, no matter where they may live on the earth. And certainly this broadcast is important for all people, because every people on this planet are certainly dedicated to the preservation of their own heritage, their own way of life, and obviously their freedom and independence. No people wants to be controlled or occupied or oppressed by any other people or any other nation. And that's true whether you talk about the Palestinians or whether you talk about people in Africa or Asia or the people of the United States of America. Our country was created by a declaration of independence and a great revolutionary war against the most powerful nation on earth, the British Empire, because we wanted to run our own affairs. And that's what we've got to deal with here in the Middle East. Now, I have been doing a lot of the chapters of my book on this program on a daily basis. I'm still doing that, but today I want to talk a little bit about the background of the Arab-Israeli conflict, more specifically, what's going on in Lebanon today, and what's going on in Palestine today. An incredible catastrophe is happening in the Middle East. And it's a catastrophe not just for the Lebanese people, a humanitarian disaster with, I think, upwards to 1,000 killed already in Lebanon, thousands who have been injured, even many hundreds of children killed, disfigured, crippled, blinded. But in addition to the humanitarian crisis, it's also been a catastrophic crisis for America in terms of our foreign policy, in terms of the interest of the United States, the interest of the American people. Lebanon was an ally of the United States of America. We helped install that government. We pushed out the Syrians. And I think we know now why we pushed out the Syrians. It was so Israel could have a clearer hand in Lebanon. If Syria would have been there, probably Israel wouldn't have attacked the helpless and hapless Lebanese state. But we helped push out the Syrians. We supported this government. We gave this government aid. This government was very friendly to the United States of America, and there were, at least until recent weeks, 25,000 Americans who were living and working, are teaching, are doing business in Lebanon. And even while these Americans were still there, still in harm's way, Israel unleashed horrendous bombing and military campaign against the country. And this bombing has taken the lives not simply of so-called Hezbollah soldiers and officials. Is taking the lives primarily of civilians, and that's admitted by all sides of the upwards of 1,000 Lebanese, and I think that's what the real figures are. The government issues a figure. It's now over 800, but I think it's far closer to 1,000 when they find the remains of the bodies under the rubble, just similar to the way that many bodies were found in New Orleans in the wake of Katrina, simply from flooding. And that wasn't even a situation of extreme bombing or anything that you've had in the nation of Lebanon. I think the figures will go much higher. But even the government admits it, and the news media admits it, that the overwhelming majority of these victims are, in fact, women and children and civilians. Only a small percentage are Hezbollah fighters. Now, that's kind of interesting, too, because Hezbollah is being called terrorist in this entire conflict. And yet, in Israel, you had about 80 or 90, maybe up to 100 casualties now, and three-quarters of them have been military casualties. Yes, Hezbollah has sent rockets into Israel. And again, we must remember, these rockets were in a response to the massive bombing, including of civilian targets, roads, bridges, power stations, television stations, massive bombings by Israel. Now, they can say they were bombing, whatever, Hezbollah leaders, but somehow if Hezbollah bombs a civilian target, or just generally, that's the only thing they have. They don't have laser-guided missiles. They don't have any jets that they can go in and strafe and bomb and kill and maim in mass like Israel has. But if they send a rocket back, then they're terrorists. But somehow Israel, which is killing three-quarters of their victims, are in fact civilians, men, women, and children who are not military. We've got 1 million people who have been displaced from their homes already in Lebanon. In fact, Israel's ordering out hundreds of thousands of people from their homes. They're putting out leaflets, and then of course many of these people can't leave because Israel has bombed the bridges, bombed the roads, bombed the tunnels. You know, that absolutely shut down the society. And Israel has had massacres such as El Marine, where they actually told villagers they had to leave. They got into a convoy of cars to leave, and then Israel attacked the convoy and killed over 20 civilians. Of course, you had the Qana massacre of almost entirely women and children. 36 children, at least, died in this horrible attack. And these people, they could not go anywhere. But Israel puts out these leaflets that you must vacate, and then they bomb and kill and maim, and of course, artillery is not a pinpoint weapon either. And Israel is firing literally hundreds of thousands of 200 or 300 pound exploding shells into Lebanon, which is committing tremendous devastation, loss of life, homes, properties, and certainly not simply military targets. And yet Israel is never referred to as a terrorist nation. And when these journalists interview Israelis, they never refer to them. You know, the Israelis are constantly saying these Hezbollah terrorists. So Americans and the world are not getting the true picture of what's really happening in Lebanon, and the true picture of who's the terrorist and who's not. And by United Nations rules, by Geneva rules, and by the rules of conscience, you know, we've prosecuted, and we have prosecuted Serbians in the World Court in The Hague for so-called ethnic cleansing. Well, when you put out leaflets and say that you must leave your home and vacate significant parts of your country, and then you bomb people that dare to stay because we're gonna bomb everything to oblivion, and that's Israel's tactic. They want to bomb and destroy everything they can in Lebanon, and that's how they're going to do Hamas, where they're just going to destroy everything. So anybody down there would be a terrorist. Well, that's what you call ethnic cleansing. That's specifically what it's called, ethnic cleansing. And by the way, the typical lies that we hear and we've heard from Israel for all these years, you know, the Palestinians were driven out of their territory in Palestine by the new Israeli state in 48, 49, 50. They were driven out through terrorism and terror, like the massacre at Deir Yassin, where over 100 civilians were brutally butchered, defenseless civilians in a village that was occupied by the Irgun and the other radical Jewish groups. And they even publicized this terrible terroristic and murderous act to cause these people to flee their homes. And then once the Palestinians fled their homes, they were not allowed to return back to their villages, their homes, their farms, their businesses. And Israel, very conveniently, they wouldn't let them back in the border. They wouldn't let them back in the country, back to where they lived. And Israel conveniently passed a law saying the absentee property law, and that enabled Israel to confiscate the land. Interestingly enough, at the time of the foundation of the Israeli state, and there's many different sources you can find on this, the Jews, these radical Zionist Jews, only owned about 5% of the land of what is today called Israel. 5%. Palestinians owned 95% of the land, which is now Israel. And they literally confiscated this land. And then they segregated, of course, and in fact they still did that on the West Bank. I mean, the West Bank was conquered back in 67. They have continually built settlements in violation, by the way, of the United Nations resolutions, in violations of stated American policy again and again and again. But, of course, our politicians turned a blind eye on it. And now in the very land they stole from the Palestinian people, they have erected settlements which are totally segregated, where in many of them, the Palestinian can't dare step foot on those settlements or in those neighborhoods. And nobody raises any alarm about apartheid or racism or segregation or whatever. The same Jewish media that has decried segregation in the South and decried segregation in South Africa sees no problem with Jews stealing other people's lands, building settlements, and then segregating them. Not only does Israel have segregated schools, they have segregated villages, they have segregated settlements. It's just incredible. Israel, of course, as I pointed out many times, in Israel is not legal for a Jew to even marry a non-Jew. If you had that kind of law in Austria or Germany or America, that would be viciously attacked by the media. There would be world campaigns against it. There would be marches against it. There would be people be upset about it. But somehow Israel's able to get away with it. Everything seems to be a special exception for Israel. Now, why is this? And I maintain this special relationship for Israel exists because of the tremendous power of these extremist Jews in media and government in the United States of America and around the world. Now, they don't have the same kind of influence in Europe that they have in America, but they still have a lot of influence. If you go into Paris, you'll find a lot of the media there is Jewish-owned. The whole Mohammed cartoon controversy that started off in Denmark. The man behind it was Fleming Rose, who, in fact, was of Jewish descent. There is a tremendous Jewish impact in the media in England. And, of course, America, it's just overwhelmingly. And if those of you who have been listening to my chapter from Jewish supremacism on Jewish media supremacy and how much power they have in the media of America, you know this power is beyond, I think it's beyond what most people could even imagine. It's beyond your worst fears if you have an understanding of it already. It's an incredible power. And that power also influences papers all over the world, far beyond the shores of the United States of America, even in the Arab countries. I remember being in Bahrain where I addressed some meetings there in the Hilton Hotel and going to Qatar and doing Al Jazeera a few years ago. And I was reading the Gulf News, which is one of the major newspapers down there, an English language newspaper. And they were obviously, their editorial policy was certainly against what Israel was doing. But interestingly enough, they ran articles from Associated Press and UPI and from, you know, different New York Times and different newspapers from around the world, which are Jewish controlled, which again put the Jewish slant on it. I heard many Arabs in the media, and being interviewed, in fact, by some of the major Western media, refer to the Israeli soldiers as kidnapped soldiers. And the truth is, and I've been trying to say this, the assault on Lebanon was really premeditated. The soldiers' capture was simply the excuse for what Israel did. In fact, they even had a PowerPoint presentation in Washington of the Israelis talking about what they were going to do to Hezbollah. But what's been going on, there have been hundreds of violations of the so-called blue line between the two countries, Israel and Lebanon, over the last few years. And Israel has violated that blue line far more than Hezbollah has violated. Let's talk about this Israeli Lebanese conflict for a minute so you get some understanding of some of the background of the conflict. First of all, Israel invaded Lebanon in the early 80s, and in the process it was a terrible disaster and a catastrophe for the Lebanese people, and including so many millions of Christians that exist in Lebanon, because they suffered from the bombing just as the Islamic people suffered. And by the way, the warfare that was going on between, in the civil war between the Christians and Muslims in Lebanon, was certainly something sponsored by Israel, and I can prove that. You can simply read the diaries of Moshe Sherrett, the former Israeli president, and he even talks about the fact that Israel purposefully tried to foment this civil war, a war, by the way, which killed again, tens of thousands of people. The Israeli bombing killed at least 20,000 Lebanese civilians. It destroyed at least 100,000 homes. And Israel, by the way, occupied what's called the Sheba Farms. That's part of Lebanon. Israel has no claim to this property. It didn't exist in the original Israeli state. This was Lebanese property. So Israel still has, even before this latest incursion, Israel was occupying and violating Lebanese territorial integrity. And yet you hear in the media how you know, Hezbollah violated Israeli territorial integrity by capturing two soldiers. Israel has gone in and kidnapped civilians, military people, hundreds of times over the last few years. And in fact, from that last invasion, they still held some of the people of Lebanon, and that's one reason why Hezbollah tried to grab the two soldiers to try and negotiate a return of their people who Israel captured years ago. But you don't hear anything about those captures much in the American media or the international media. That's not a big deal. If Israel goes in and sends an assassination team into Lebanon or some other neighboring Arab countries, or even European countries, Israel has sent assassination teams into Europe, violating European sovereignty. When that's happened, you don't hear anything about Israel violating the sovereignty, and there's certainly no threats of going to war against Israel on that token. So this was a premeditated thing what Israel is doing right now in Lebanon. And Hezbollah, what is Hezbollah? Is Hezbollah a terrorist organization? And I can tell you, I don't think so. Or I think that Hezbollah has done some things that I certainly would be completely opposed to. Anytime that the civilians are targeted or harmed, I would oppose to it. I'd be opposed to it. But overall, Hezbollah began and Hezbollah existed as a resistance to Israeli occupation of Lebanon. We got to get that back in our minds. How did this conflict start? Israeli occupation went on for 18 years. And during that period, thousands of Lebanese were kidnapped and taken by the Israelis. Thousands of Lebanese were tortured in the dungeons of the Israeli prisons. Terrible tortures. Thousands of, you know, of homes were razed and destroyed in this process. Hezbollah started as in a reaction to this. Now, they didn't have jets and they didn't have biological, nuclear, and chemical weapons like Israel had, but they fought any way that they could fight, and sometimes they fought with a suicide bomber, you know. But let me tell you, I don't see any moral difference between a suicide bomber and somebody in a F-16 fighter jet who fires a missile into an apartment complex, and then kills 10 or 15 little boys and girls between the ages of 6 months and 16 years. I don't see much difference there. In fact, I think the pilot is a greater offender. The pilot's, you know, he's getting medals, while the suicide bomber, at least he's sacrificing his life for what he believes in. But I don't agree with either approach. So don't let anybody, I don't want anybody to misquote me here at all. I'm absolutely opposed to any sort of terrorism, whether it be state terrorism or individual terrorism or terrorism by any group. But if you call Hezbollah a terrorist organization, then you must call Israel a terrorist organization. As I've pointed out many times, and I think I need to point this out again and again and again, because if I don't point it out, people won't know the score. People, you know, Americans have been so propagandized. And Europeans too. Europeans don't know these things. I mean, Europeans and Americans, they have no idea that Israel, you know, committed terror. They know it. I guess some scholars know it. Some historians know it. Some government professors, some people who teach international relations like I do, or history like I do, they know it. But the average person doesn't know it because the media doesn't tell you the fact that Israel has committed terrorist acts against the United States of America. Now, this is absolutely undeniable. And I'm talking about not just some radical Jewish group or Zionist group in Israel. I'm talking about the Israeli government. The highest echelons of the Israeli government authorized and committed terrorist acts and other terribly treacherous and damaging actions against the United States of America. The Lavon Affair first comes to mind. And this was an act by the Mossad, the Israeli government. In fact, the Israeli defense minister had to resign, not because of the fact that Israeli made terrorist attacks. I'm talking about firebomb attacks on American installations, libraries, movie theaters in Egypt. And there would have been huge carnage. They already conceded in blowing up a couple of facilities, but there would have been huge carnage, except for the fact that the plot unraveled, that the Israeli terrorist, one of the bombs that he had in one of his pockets, blew up prematurely. He was captured. He spilled the beans. They rounded up the entire Mossad gang. They were arrested. And there's no arguing about this, ladies and gentlemen. Anybody that wants to argue about this is simply lying, because Israel, just last year, in fact, had an award ceremony for the terrorists who attacked America. That's right. They gave them medals. They were called by the president of Israel heroes for their terrorist attacks upon the United States of America. And this is a nation we send money to? This is a nation that we send bombs to? A nation that attacked us and a terrorist attacked the Levant Affair. Look it up in Wikipedia. Look it up. Continue to look it up. There's no denying that it existed. There's no denying Israel did this. And that one act itself by the Israeli government should have ever made Israel an enemy of the United States. And by the way, it wasn't just a terroristic act that they committed against American installations and the loss of life and property that this would have resulted if the plot would have continued. But it's also the fact. It was a great act of treachery, because they were literally trying to get America into war with a nation that had not attacked us. In other words, they were going to falsely blame another country for these terrible attacks. That was the whole plan, the plot. To blame Egypt for these attacks on America, and then America would have gotten into a war with a country that had not harmed us. And in turn, we would have bombed Egypt and attacked Egypt, and it would have cost many, many Egyptian innocent lives, both civilians and military. And in the process, it would have cost American lives and billions of dollars of American money. I mean, this was organized by the Israeli state. Now, also, I've talked about before, and there's many documentaries that on this, and if you read both sides, you'll certainly see that the evidence is overwhelmingly powerful, that Israel knew exactly what they were doing when they attacked the USS ship, the USS Liberty. They claimed it was all a mistake, but the Secretary of State at the time, Dean Rusk of the United States of America, the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff of the United States of America, Admiral Thomas Moore, and many other major Americans who were who had the means to know, who were in the middle of what was going on at the time, and who have read most of the accounts and the documentation since that time, they said there's no question that Israel attacked, our country deliberately. Now, both these people, through their roles in governments, had supported Israel. Admiral Thomas Moore, in his capacity of Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, had to ship American military equipment to Israel on more than one occasion. And in fact, he writes about that. He talks about their incredible control over the American government. Dean Rusk, America was very much friendly to Israel at the time. He was no enemy of Israel. He had no record of being an enemy of the Israeli state. And he himself says that Israel attacked this ship. 24 Americans were killed. 173 Americans were grievously wounded. An American ship, international waters. This was an act of war. We went to war before. This country went to war against Vietnam and the Gulf of Tonkin resolution on an attack, or a supposed attack on an American ship. And we went to war with Spain and the battleship Maine, and what happened in Cuba. And this was, and of course, Pearl Harbor. And this was a secret. It was a surprise attack on a defenseless, almost defenseless American ship, and nothing has happened. But this is not the end of it. We had the Jonathan Pollard case. Jonathan Pollard, here's a man who spied for Israel, spied for the Mossad, and Israel in turn sold the information to the Soviets at the time, which caused the death of many American operatives in Eastern Europe. Treachery, ladies and gentlemen, and this cost the lives of many of our people during this period. I mean, treachery, terrorism, Israel has been doing this for a long time. Hezbollah was a reaction to this Israeli murder, destruction, occupation, tyranny, torture that existed in that particular country. And how does this conflict start? Well, okay, some Israeli soldiers were killed, two were captured. On that pretext, Israel began wholesale bombing of Lebanon with the death of many civilians. At that point, and only at that point, did Hezbollah begin to rain this huge attack of missiles upon Israel. And that's the facts, and that's the reality of what happened here. And Hezbollah has offered many times to say that, you know, if you stop the attacks on Lebanon, if you go to the battlefield, it's one thing, you attack Hezbollah positions, one thing, but you stop the attacks in Lebanon, we will stop the missiles going in to Israel. Again, this is buried in the media, and it's just simply not, it's not talked about. I can give you many examples of the so-called incursions of Israel. You know, in October 2000, the Israeli Defense Force shot at unarmed Palestinian demonstrators on the border, killing 3 and wounding 20. Now, how can you get worse than that? Shot at demonstrators, unarmed, killing 3 and wounding 20 on the border. Now, in response, Hezbollah kidnapped 3 Israeli soldiers. All right, they crossed the border. On several occasions, Hezbollah fired missiles and mortar rounds at IDF positions, you know, Israeli army positions. And the IDF responded with heavy artillery and sometimes aerial bombardment. Now, in 2003, 3 Israelis and 3 Lebanese were killed. 1 Israeli soldier, 2 Hezbollah fighters in 2005. So we can go on and on. 2 Lebanese people and 3 Israeli soldiers in February 2006. You know, rockets were fired from Lebanon and Israel several times, 2004, 5 and 6, on some occasions by Hezbollah. But the UN records, quote, none of the incidents resulted in a military escalation. The only reason this escalation came about was because this was a premeditated plan on the part of Israel. And again, these attacks were in response to what Israel has done, the occupation of the Sheba farms in Lebanon, the occupation of Lebanon for all these years, the holding today of Lebanese civilians in Israeli prisons years after the Israeli occupation, and an attempt to, the response to Israeli incursions into Lebanon. You must go back to the, you know, original situation. Now, what Hezbollah was trying to do in this particular case was they were trying to exchange these 2 captured Israelis for the 15 prisoners of war taken by the Israelis during the occupation of Lebanon. And by the way, the fact that Israel has not released these men is a breach of the Geneva Convention. I think it's Article 118. And they've never been released. I mean, we can go on and on and on. So what happened on July 12th, when these Israeli soldiers were captured? It was not just a single incident. It was one instance in a long sequence of small incursions and attacks over many years by both sides. In fact, primarily and more by Israel than by Lebanon. Far more by Israel. So, you know, we can, you know, it's just, I've read in one of the articles, I think it was in one of the British newspapers, it said, quote, a senior Israeli official told the Washington Post that the raid by Hezbollah provided Israel with a unique moment for wiping out the organization. This was their opportunity for a premeditated plan. So now we have the latest thing is, of course, there is a peace plan promoted primarily by the United States. I mean, a country whose foreign policy is totally in the hands of Israel. We have a peace plan, and basically, the United States is trying to say that Israel has to be, must be able to stay in Lebanon. And by the way, when the Israelis drive out the Lebanese civilians and they occupy this country, who's to say they won't do what they did on the West Bank, what they did in Gaza, what they've done repeatedly, what they're doing in Lebanon today, where Israel still occupies another nation's countryside and land and population, build settlements and just take over the land. You know, that's exactly, so that's, of course, the Lebanese are concerned about this and worried about it. Israel could make peace, I believe, in the Middle East if they would get out completely of the West Bank. And they would also give the people of Gaza a chance to make a decent life. Gaza's become one huge concentration camp. They won't even give, they control the ports, Israel does. They won't even give Gaza the money that they need in terms of the revenue, the tax revenue and the port revenue that comes from that. Now that's fact. And the people of Gaza, the people of Lebanon, of course, you've got a whole country now where Israel's blockading the nation from the sea. You know, without power, without oil, without gasoline, without good telephone service, without roads and bridges, what happens to any country? There is very quickly starvation. There is very quickly hunger. There is very quickly sanitation problems and disease problems. There is very quickly, in the very beginning, there are hospitals who are trying to keep people alive with dialysis machines or do operations, and they have no power. And this ends up costing lives. In addition to the terrible number of lives caused by the direct bombing and the rest of it. Finally, let's talk some about how this Lebanese war is going to affect America. And by the way, then tomorrow I'll try to continue on with the Jewish Supremacist book, because I know many of you are waiting for the next chapter, which deals with the origins of anti-Semitism, or how anti-Semitism really got going, and you know what it means and what it really stands for, and why Jewish radicals have had such a reaction to them over the years in almost every country where they resided. But I will go back to that tomorrow. But let's talk about America a little bit. How does this policy? Now, I've talked so many times about the Iraq War, and I must say, yours truly talked, as you know, all those people who have been listening to me for years and reading my work for years know that before the Iraq War even started, I said there aren't any weapons of mass destruction, because if there were any weapons, America, the inspectors would have been told where they were and found them. They offered multi-million dollar rewards for any Iraqi soldier, sailor, government official, anybody who would tell them where the weapons were. You can't hide hundreds of tons or thousands of tons of munitions and weapons of mass destruction without a lot of people knowing where they're hidden. And this was a bonanza. We had weapons inspectors all over the country. Anybody could have walked the American embassy and collected $25 million by just showing one site. We knew there were no weapons of mass destruction. George Bush knew it, unless he was too stupid not to know it, and I think that's very possible. You know, but he simply does whatever his Jewish master neocon leaders want. The Niger, the whole Niger yellowcake uranium thing was a lie. Saddam was never a threat to the United States of America. Of course, it's been talked about in the media so often. You know, Iraq had nothing whatsoever to do with al-Qaeda. And Saddam had a secular regime. Saddam had a regime that, you know, that offered women the university training, where the women did not have to wear the veil and so forth in his country. And he was one of the many, represented one of the many regimes that al-Qaeda, or the people around Osama bin Laden, even there really wasn't an al-Qaeda until after 9/11. There was a few people around Osama bin Laden that wanted a policy of attacking the United States because of our policy in the Middle East and in Israel and so forth. But anyway, they were in very bad terms, and they were no friends at all, and yet the lie was put out that Iraq and Saddam was behind the attacks against America. And what's ironic about this entire affair is that Saddam was our ally against Iran. Now, as soon as that war was over, and Saddam had quite a good military force, but he was Israel's enemy and supporting the Palestinians, then suddenly he became the enemy of the United States of America, supposed enemy, even though he never wanted to be our enemy. He just didn't want America to have sanctions against them. He was willing to sell us oil at bargain basement prices. He wanted good relations with the United States. It was the Israelis that didn't want this relation because they didn't want any power in the United States to stand against Israel. Well, as you know, all these things that I said years ago turned out to be true. And one reason why I'm enjoying a degree of popularity today in Europe and around the world is because of the fact that many people in the university communities around the world and in the academic communities and other establishment communities, in fact, they know this. One of the most interesting phenomena recently was the paper by Dr. Stephen Walt of Harvard, Kennedy School of Government, the most prestigious university in the United States, and Dr. Mearsheimer, I should say, from the University of Chicago, and their excellent paper, Israel and the United States Foreign Policy. And in that policy, they were attacked by these Jewish extremists, and they were, and interestingly enough, they, one of the attacks was, they said, this is practically taken from David Duke's website. These are things that David Duke has been saying for years. And instead of discrediting these men by saying that, a lot of the scholars and people around the world that read these Jewish attacks, they went to my website. And they read my website and read the documentation and read the ideas and rationale, and they came to see that my website made sense, my ideas make sense, that my papers were intelligent and well written and well documented. And then they realized that, well, if David Duke is really on the cutting edge, if he's predating the most prestigious universities in the United States, practically Harvard and the University of Chicago, and some of the leading think tanks and thinkers of the country, then maybe there is something to him. Maybe there is something to the ideas he represents. And people now are beginning to realize that that I have been pretty much right down the line correct on what's happening. But Americans are still not getting the information. Americans still have no idea what the Levon affair was, for instance. Recently, the other day in America, a United States Navy man was arrested for spying for Israel. Now, ladies and gentlemen, let's get this straight. We're sending Israel billions of our dollars a year. If a Navy man was spying for Israel, that means he was spying not only Israel's approval, but with Israel's, you know, avid approval. You know, they were paying him. They were giving him money. They were supporting him. And he was supplying Israel with military intelligence and violation of American laws. Now, what kind of an ally spies on another ally? That's not really much of an ally, and that's an enemy. That's not an ally. And yet, this is washed under or swept under the rug. I think of washed under the rug, I guess, because of Hurricane Katrina and all the water we had down in Louisiana. But it's spread under the rug, or swept under the rug, and it's continually like this. And we get biased every second, practically of every day, on some of the American news networks, which most of them are Jewish producers. Yeah, right? You know, Mr. Wolf Blitzer, who was a former absolute Jewish supremacist, extremist Zionist, who was actually an employee of the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, which is a Jewish lobby, this radical Jewish lobby in the United States government of the United States. He is now on CNN, and he's going to tell us what it's all about. And he's going to interview people on both sides of the question, and you really can expect this man to be unbiased, right? He's going to give us an unbiased presentation of what's happening. Well, he is repeated 1,000 times, ladies and gentlemen, in producers, in directors, in the writers, in the people that are behind the news and control the news, who decide what stories to run and what stories not to run. What Israel's doing is so horrendous that even biased reporting, people can't help but get an idea of what's going on. If they actually reported as it really was, the whole world would rise up in arms against Israel. There would be prosecutions against practically every Israeli government official for war crimes and human rights violations. There'd be a worldwide boycott of Israel like there was against South Africa. And Israel is so much more draconian than anything South Africa ever did. I mean, it's just incredible. But even with it, I mean, see, how do you, when you talk about the death counts, you talk about 100 Israelis and about three-quarters of the military who had died. And you talk about almost 1,000 Lebanese and three-quarters of civilians, women and children who have died. And then you know, the average person out there kind of gets the point, okay, Hezbollah is supposed to be the terrorists. They're killing military. Israel's killing civilians. Is that how it works? In other words, if we had a true expression of what's really happening in the Middle East right now, I can guarantee you the media in America would absolutely be excoriating Israel as not a friend of the United States, but as somebody who's damaging our country. And by Condi Rice and Bush and all that supporting this Israeli murder and massacre in Lebanon, every American is being harmed and hurt. Not George Bush. I mean, you know, he's got his farm, he's got his money, he can write his books, you know, he's got his praise by liberal media. But every American is being harmed. Every American is in greater danger when he or she travels around the world. Every American is going to pay the price in higher oil prices in this location. And this adventurism, this Israeli controlled adventurism, what really has it done to America in the world? What has it done to other countries? Let's just get to the bottom line, right? We invaded, you know, Iraq, and we were told, and our governments told us, and the media told us that we were, you know, it was Operation, you know, Freedom for Iraq and all this other kind of garbage. We were going to go bring democracy. We were going to bring a better life for the people of Iraq. And what's happened in Iraq, ladies and gentlemen? You know, there were over 2,000 people, most of them women and children, who were murdered last month in massive, and in fact, in a rising civil war, which, by the way, the Israelis want as well. And that's exactly what they want in Lebanon, and they wanted it. They want it in Iraq. That's not good for America, but it's what they want. And this has been going on. 150,000 civilians in a small country killed. Total dislocation of people's lives. Not ability to even go to school or communicate. Half the time, no power on. I mean, this is what we've done. You know, the world sees this incredible chaos, this murder and this war and this disaster in Iraq. We did that. No matter what you say, the invasion of Iraq caused this. We caused immense loss of human life, not just in terms of our attacks, but also in terms of the resulting dislocation. We can, you know, it's like Humpty Dumpty has fallen off the wall. Nobody can put Humpty Dumpty together again. And we can't put Iraq. Saddam was, you know, a very hard man, but he was keeping it together, you know, and now it's fallen apart, and it's causing enormous human misery, murder, death, and chaos. This is the result of what we did. And as an American, of course, I have to be incredibly concerned, because I come at these primarily as standpoint of a patriot, but I also have to be concerned about human life. And as an American, I have to be concerned about, you know, women and children dying because of what we do. I feel a responsibility there. I'm an American. I may not agree with the government, but it's still my country. When George Bush bombs that country, does what he does to the country, he does it in response to America. But I'm also concerned, and very much more concerned, in fact, that's probably my primary concern, about our own boys and girls these days that are in Iraq. The thousands and thousands and thousands who are losing their eyesight, who are losing their ability to walk, who are losing legs, arms, sometimes all of them, who are having their face blown off, who are being disfigured for the rest of their lives, mentally disabled for the rest of their lives, scarred both mentally and physically, tens of thousands of Americans. I'm concerned about the hundreds of billions, the trillions of dollars, ultimately, that this war will cost the hardworking American people. At a time when I think the economy is going to get tougher and tougher for America, and there's so many Americans who can't afford medical insurance, and there's so many Americans who are middle-class Americans who simply can't make ends meet anymore, and our government's going to spend trillions. And it's not even in a war for the United States. It's why our fighting men are great people. I've been around military all my life. My father was a colonel. You know, I instructed military officers during the Laotian War. I've been around, you know, in the Vietnam War. I've been around military all my life, and I can tell you, there's nobody with greater respect for the American fighting man than I have. But ladies and gentlemen, they have been subverted. There's no bigger betrayal of America than sending a man into battle, not for his own country, not for his true freedom or his well-being as a country, but for the interest of a foreign nation. Israel caused the Iraq War. Israel's the source of the Iraq War. And we are having Americans losing their limbs and their lives, and their families having the suffering from that, of course, as well as the individual men who've lost these precious aspects of their lives. But we're having this because of the fact that Israel controls our policies. And in truth, this war, not only are their lives and their limbs being lost for no real purpose, they are literally being lost in the service of another nation against the interests of the United States, even beyond the interest of our soldiers and our families that are suffering such damage from this war, because we are making millions, hundreds of millions of people, billions really, around the world, hate and despise America. Not only not want to do economic work, but I mean literally want to kill us, want to attack us, want to hurt us any way they can. And ladies and gentlemen, they're doing so. We have been the greatest friend of killers like Al-Qaeda and the terrorists who've really caused so much problems in both in Europe and around in America, around the world, like 9/11. We have been their friend. We have helped them. We have been their greatest recruiting tool. And we have really hurt our cause and our security. We wouldn't have even had 9/11, ladies and gentlemen, except for the control of Israel over our policy. Those people didn't come hate us or attack us because we were free or because, you know, whatever. They attacked us because specifically of the fact that American foreign policy has been controlled by Israel, their big enemy in the Middle East, and that we have acted on Israel's behalf, which has hurt them in their respective nations and among their own people. 600,000 Iraqis, children, died from our embargoes over many decades. 600,000. You know, and these policies, again, were driven by the neoconservatives. That's why. That's why we were attacked. You know, they didn't attack Switzerland, which is the oldest standing democracy in the world. They didn't attack Iceland, you know, which is another country which has the longest parliament acting in the world. They didn't attack us because we're free. They attacked us because of what our policies have been. Well, that's it, ladies and gentlemen. That's my show for today, primarily about Lebanon, the kind of some background in the Middle East. And I look forward to being with you again tomorrow. I'll take up the book again. And on the roots of anti-Semitism. Appreciate all of you. I hope that you all will support my work handily. I need your contributions, your support. The David Duke Report comes out many times a year, and I need your support. I think you'll enjoy that magazine very much. Thanks so much. I hope to see you again tomorrow. And until that time comes, please take care, and God bless you. And I hope that you're able to really educate your friends and your family, your neighbors. You have the internet in front of you. You can reach so many people around the world with this message. Please do so. Love y'all, and I'll see you again tomorrow. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.davidduke.com.